The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition today. There's Clasico with your man Jude leaving Montjuic, saying mon Dieu. There's FC Bayern's dancing all over Darmstadt. I came with a hattie, but no tells. There's the greatest logic-defying City I come back ever. Is it Moji? And Combinato Grosso. We hear about the latest violence in Marseille that left a manager in hospital and the clash with Lyon suspended. All that and much more in this Totally Football Show. Hey, listener, thank you for joining us. It's Tuesday, the 31st of October, as we get the Euro crew back together. There's James Horncastle.
Hi, Jimbo.
Alvaro Romeo.
Hola.
Julian Laurent.
Bonjour.
And, of course, Raphael Honigstein. Where's Rafa?
On his way.
Is he on his way?
He's on his way. He had a bike problem, he said. He cycles to work.
He likes to cycle, yeah.
Somehow.
Jan Ulrich.
Yeah.
Taxis for so many years, he's turned into Lance Armstrong.
Right. Well.
Well, let's hope not.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope he's going to be here soon because it's going to be moment of the week time. And I know he enjoys that. Let's, there's lots of other things we could do. Hey, what we could do is fill in with a quick chat about the Ballon d'Or, which happened in Paris.
Of course, Théâtre du Châtelet. Yeah, lovely, lovely theatre, that.
Is it nice?
Yeah, lovely.
What did you make of the ceremony and the gongs handed out?
So, as you know, I love the Ballon d'Or. There's a lot of people who don't like it. I understand the issue with the individual award in a team sport, but I absolutely love it. I love all the outfit. I check what everybody's wearing, right. The shoes, the suits, uh-huh. What the wags are wearing, everything.
Who are your winners and losers on the red carpet?
So there seemed to be a lot of chats about Jude Bellingham's outfit, especially the really big trousers.
Yes.
I was on BBC Five Live on Tuesday morning, and they even asked me the question. I was like, okay. I thought Jude looked really classy, but okay. For me, the winner has to be Djibril Cissé. I mean, if
why
you
was Djibril Cissé there?
Because L'Équipe TV, who is the broadcaster of the Ballon d'Or,
okay,
he's one of their pundits. He's one of their like stars, ex-player kind of thing. Okay. So he cut the how do you say
the ribbon?
The ribbon to okay. open officially the
because he is the Lord of Fodderingham. Was that
something like that? Yeah. Yeah, because he bought, remember that place? And he had, so he dyed his hair all blue, like bright blue. Mm. And he had the shoes matching and this white suit with nothing underneath, clearly, because no shirt, I mean. Mm. I'm sure he's wearing pants.
So look, you rock, James.
Yeah, I would love to see you like that, James.
Would you like to?
Yeah, I really would. I'm sure a lot of people would.
I'm going to struggle with dyeing my hair,
but you can do the beard.
Right. Who else loves the Ballon d'Or? Alvaro?
Yeah, I like it. I don't have any problem with that.
Right.
And honestly, I know that Lionel Messi didn't have a great, perhaps, year in Europe.
Okay.
Especially in the big Champions League games. Mm. But on the other hand, the World Cup 2022 counted, and Lionel Messi was phenomenal in that World Cup. So I don't have any problem with him winning it. And, you know, we don't need to go too much into specifics, I think. I think that Erling Haaland or Rodri or Mbappé, but definitely Mbappé and Haaland will win it in the future.
Okay. Rafa wrote a piece on The Athletic about why it should have been Jude Bellingham.
Yeah, he went too far there.
I put Lautaro Martinez. Hmm? No, because we were asked.
Did you have to pick someone outside of the
top
three?
Exactly. Okay, and he picked Jude. So you know, someone picked Haaland because that was out of the box.
Uh-huh.
Because everyone knew it was going to be Messi.
Yeah.
So you had to make, you know, an argument for somebody else.
Okay. Erling Haaland, who scored a remarkable 52 goals for Manchester City last season, won the Gerd Müller Trophy for scoring goals. The Lev Yashin Trophy, that was Emiliano Martinez, who got the award from his father. That's pretty sweet, no? Other news, Jude Bellingham got the Coppa Trophy for the best under-21 male player, and Aitana Bonmati, who was player of the tournament for Spain at the World Cup, and also part of that Femini team, Barcelona Femini team, won the women's Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, in the last 2 years, Alexia Putellas had won it. Another Spanish player. This time it was Aitana Bonmatí. I have to say that Aitana is probably the biggest Spanish type footballer you can find in the sense that it's not a very tall one that likes passing. In fact, there is a documentary about Barcelona called Take the Ball, Pass the Ball, and Aitana Bonmatí probably will fit in that description because this is what she does best, but also she has the quality to score goals like the goal she scored in the World Cup against Costa Rica, a goal that probably no other player in the World Cup could have scored, just dribbling past the footballer in a way I haven't seen. I think that it was well deserved. She plays in Barcelona. She's the best player among so many stars like Fridolina Rolfo, Graham Hansen, Alexia Putellas. Last season she was definitely the best, and she's a silent leader as well, something that goes in line with players like Xavi or Iniesta, players that don't have a massive self-entitlement and think about the collective. So congratulations to her.
Excellent. All right. Oh, you mentioned Beckham's documentary, Jules, but you were raving about another football-related doco recently.
Yes. Yeah, me and Raf have loved the Colin Rooney Wagata story, Wagata Christie.
Right, where's that on?
That's on Disney Plus. Okay. And it's just, I mean, I think Colin Rooney and Wayne, to some extent, came out really well from it.
Uh-huh. Did they produce it?
I don't think so.
Okay,
interesting. Certainly not as directly as Beckham produces his own documentary. And I don't know what the Vardy's side of the story is, really.
Does that not come across in the documentary?
No, because it's just her. It's just Colleen talking, really.
Oh, really?
But,
okay.
But the whole thing is only three episodes, so it's quick. It's a sad story in a way, but it's the her whole investigation and even the way she talks, and she keeps saying, like, it's so cheeky. Like, I can't do the accent, obviously.
That was quite good.
It was not bad. Yeah. But she comes across really... I've never met her before. I've never met Rooney, Wayne, apart from a few press conferences on Mixzone and things like that. But they come out, I have to say, really good. And all it can't have been easy for her, for Vardy, for anyone. And she said, like, that court case at the High Court, not far from here, our office, must have been a really, really, like, horrible moment, to be fair, for everyone.
So let's go for some moments of the weekend. And hey, presto, Rafa, you made it.
James, hello.
Where have you been?
I've been, I was cycling.
Is that right?
I had a flat tire.
No.
Then the second bike I tried, because I used the electric ones, didn't work. So then I had to go and look for a third one.
What a story.
So... All right. It was quite
Did
the journey.
Did it take you back to Rome, Raf?
Quite the journey. A little bit, James. A little bit.
I wish I'd been there to
And you're looking very smart as well.
Yes, thank you very much. I thought I'd make an effort for today's pod.
For the Ballon d'Or.
Nice. Oh. Check it out on our YouTube channel. But, right, moments of the weekend. Raf, you take a moment to catch your breath.
I mean, I've got not just one, but two moments lined up.
Have you? Oh, wow.
They must be a first.
I mean, these are so... Both of them are so obvious.
Yeah.
I don't know which one to take. Really.
I know which one will come up.
Let's go on then. Rafa.
Shall I save the Harry Kane one for later?
Yeah, surely. When we talk about that game.
No, I'll save that for later.
Okay.
Because I think there's a goal that was even better.
Okay. What?
Yeah. Florian Wirtz.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Leverkusen.
Good. Yeah.
You've seen it?
Yeah.
Palacios. Erster Hack, zweiter Hack, dritter Hack. Ist immer noch am Ball. Ist immer noch am Ball. Tor! Da ist ein Tor! Florian Wirtz. Was macht er denn da? Das ist ja irre.
Reminiscent of JJ Okocha's famous goal against Bayern Munich and Oliver Kahn.
Still
for the connoisseurs,
not
quite as good, not quite as outrageous, tighter angle, but he basically dances past at least one defender who gets turned inside, outside, and then there's three or four others who are just kind of looking in awe. And then an incredible finish. And it's quite apt because he's been coming back to his best for the best team in Germany, Leverkusen, still top after that 2-1 win against Freiburg.
But Dortmund are the best team in Europe, right?
Points per game. Although they did suffer points. A setback, which I'll tell you later. But anyway, just Leverkusen, Florian Wirtz, both pretty amazing.
What's that now? Is it 14 games in all competitions? They've only dropped points in one. And that was the game away at Bayern Munich where they drew 2-2. Amazing. Anyway, loads to come from the Bundesliga, including your other moment of the weekend. Jules, what about you?
So there's a few that we will mention later, but I'll go for Friday night and the Nice win away at Clermont. 1-0 again for the third league game in a row. They win 1-0. Francesco Farioli doing an amazing job, as we've been saying. So they're still top of the table. They're still the best defence in Europe. And they still, to this day, have never been behind in a game in the league this season.
James?
I suppose we could go with the craziest comeback in Italian history, which happened in Sardinia on Sunday lunchtime, where Cagliari were, 3-2 down, yeah, going to stoppage time.
Why don't we get onto that later on so we can really get our teeth into it?
Okay.
Because you've got something else, haven't you?
It's Scamacca. Yeah. Scamacca on Monday night, Atalanta against Empoli, under the watchful gaze of Luciano Spalletti. Remember Scamacca scored against England at Wembley? He's had a couple of, like, just incredible performances. I know West Ham fans will be like, oh, we don't care. But he was amazing against Monza. And then again, in this game against Empoli, it's Empoli, fine. But back heel goal.
Back heel nutmeg goal.
Back heel nutmeg goal.
L'imbucata per Scamacca, gran palla, Scamacca col tacco! Scamacca col tacco! Che meraviglia, 1-0 Atalanta.
Screamer for his second. Mm. Hits the bar from outside the box, which, you know, wasn't his third, but, you know, assist for Coop Miners. Dare I say, ingiocabile. Just unplayable, James.
Right.
Ballon d'Or candidate?
I think so.
Who isn't? Alvaro, what was your moment of the weekend?
Well, there are many La Liga this weekend. Yes. Many late winners as well. But my favorite one is the one from Yangel Herrera from Girona. Ooh. Yeah, because Girona was the leader of La Liga until Real Madrid beat Barcelona.
Romantic story. Romantic.
Very romantic. Oh. And you know, and there are so many unsung heroes in Girona, and Yangel Herrera is probably one of them. Minutes before...
Pep Guardiola.
a goal from Celta had been disallowed to the irritation of Rafa Benitez. Mm-hmm. And after that, Yangel Herrera scored a beautiful one from outside the box. And yeah, Girona has 28 points out of 33, which is not a bad number to have. And yeah, I think that it was clearly the moment of the weekend for me.
Magnificent. There were one or two other moments of the weekend in Spain. And perhaps we'll start with the big game in La Liga.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Último suspiro, gana Bellingham, gana el Real Madrid. La jugada por la derecha, todo el peligro en esta segunda mitad prácticamente de Modric y Carvajal. Bellingham que marca de nuevo en el campo del Barça en Montjuic. Barça 1, Real Madrid 2, de nuevo The Beatles, de nuevo Jude Bellingham.
Nuevo The Beatles there, whatever that means. Jude Bellingham doing perhaps the most Jude Bellingham game we've seen from him yet at Real Madrid. On a day, actually, that saw English players score in four of Europe's top five leagues. In England, obviously. In Germany, Harry Kane will hear later on. In Spain and in France. Jules, do you know who it was?
Yes, of course I do. On loan from Manchester City at Reims. Reims? Yeah.
Yeah.
Double barrel name.
Yes.
Yes. Josh.
Yes.
Esbrand.
That's one of the names.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I'm like. What?
Josh Wilson Esbrand.
Wilson Esbrand. That's the one. Yeah.
Well done, Jules.
Really good entrance. Thank you.
Yeah. Excellent. And the other nation, of course, Spain. Spain, where Jude Bellingham did Jude Bellingham things. Perhaps the most Jude Bellingham things we've seen yet. Describe his impact on this biggest of games.
Well, it was a match-winning performance, and that is probably the best thing you can say about a footballer. I think that it wasn't a memorable performance in El Clásico history. I've seen, you know, more memorable ones, like, for example, Ronaldinho at Bernabeu, Messi in 2011. But this was, as I said before, a player just saying, I'm going to win this game. And that has a lot of merit as well, because he's pretty much just arrived. The first goal is incredible. I think that Ter Stegen could have done a bit more, though.
Right. Describe the first goal.
He just gets the ball, like, maybe 30 yards away.
They are a goal down at this point after Gundogan opened the scoring.
They are a goal down. It's the second half. And Real Madrid is not playing very well. Ancelotti has done a few substitutions because the game plan wasn't working for Real Madrid. And at some point, Jude Bellingham gets the goal. It's the 68th minute of the game. And he just puts it with a huge thunderbolt into the net. Really, really powerful shot without pretty much running towards the ball. He just takes a yard, no more than that, and yeah. he just produces that. He scores the goal that changes the title.
He doesn't celebrate, though.
No, because he was angry, probably, about the fact that they weren't winning, and probably he wanted more. But yeah, and the second goal is a different one, right. A little bit of a lucky one, because Carvajal sends across.
Is it lucky?
Not Bellingham.
Does he make his own luck?
Well, just because he does this so often.
No, but it's
the fact that the ball reached him is a bit lucky. No, not his goal is not lucky. The way he hits the ball, it's not a lucky one.
Pippo Inzaghi. in a midfielder's body.
Somehow, yeah.
But
the difference that this one is not onside. I mean, people in Zagi was normally offside a lot of times.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that.
Well, according to Alex Ferguson, at least.
Cheap stereotype.
I'm quoting Sir Alex.
Okay, no, but so there was fortune in that, but not in the fact that he made himself get there. I mean, if we could borrow a line from that song, the movement he needs is off the defender's shoulder, and he makes it again and again at the key moments.
I wasn't here to criticize people in Zagi.
I love it. It's a bit sensitive.
I never thought I was going to be talking about people in Zagi on the 31st of October, 2023.
Yeah.
Grateful.
We'll get to Salernitana in a few minutes' time.
But I think that Bellingham is the game winner, of course, because he is a player that not only he's scoring more goals than was expected, he's also covering many mistakes and many problems that Real Madrid has right now. They were dominated for 60-something minutes. Mm. I think that Barcelona was better until they ran out of energy and the manager had a catastrophic intervention in the game. I'm talking about Xavi, just removing midfielders. At the expense of playing Lewandowski and Rafinha, who were clearly not match fit.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he felt they were being too boring, Alvaro.
Too dull.
But they weren't being boring. Okay. Funnily enough, on Saturday, I think they were playing well after a very bad game against Shakhtar Donetsk in the Champions League. Barcelona played really good 60 minutes, and the likes of Tchouaméni or Toni Kroos, they just were asphyxiated by Gavi, who was, for me, the best player of the game. Really, even more than Bellingham, even though Bellingham deserves all the headlines. And Fermín, a player from Barcelona's academy who has proven that he's got a competitive edge to stay at Barcelona. I don't know still what his position is going to be, whether he's going to be an attacking midfielder or perhaps a player who can play behind the striker. But they were both of them phenomenal. Barcelona, you know that I refer to their defense as a deceptive defense in the sense that they've got better numbers than they show.
Okay.
But for example, this time, Barcelona's defense was very good and yet they conceded two goals because one of them was a little bit fortuitous, the second of Bellingham, and the first one because it was something that you can do nothing against. So the game in general, I think that it was very positive for Real Madrid, even though they've got their issues. And Barcelona should take the positives as well.
Mm.
But there was a player who wasn't happy with the reaction after the game.
Gundogan.
And that was Gundogan. And I can understand why. If Gundogan saw that the locker room wasn't particularly disappointed with the scoreline, I would be fuming as well. The surprising thing about all this is that it has to be Gundogan, the one who comes out and says this.
Mm.
Because at Manchester City, it would have been Pep Guardiola.
Mm.
It would have been Pep Guardiola, but here it had to be Ilkay Gundogan. I don't think that this is going to be controversial in the long run, but I hope that the young players can learn from a player who has won every title.
As you say, it was Jude Bellingham who picked up the headlines. A lot of Beatles-related headlines. Stones 1, Beatles 2 said ass because you had Mick Jagger and Ronnie Wood watching in the stand because they're now sponsoring Barcelona and the stadium.
It's part of Spotify.
It's part of Spotify.
They're the featured artist. Okay. Yeah. Jude sticks his tongue out, said Marker.
Yeah, nice, it's a good headline.
You enjoyed the game.
I loved it. Yeah, I thought it was very good on many points. Jude, of course, tactically, the back three for Xavi. I thought Ancelotti, for most of the game, just was outsmarted by Xavi, by the tactics. Camavinga's entrance, I thought, made a big difference. And I think Gavi did a really good job on Bellingham for most of the game. There's a point where you just can't almost man mark a player like Jude Bellingham for 90 minutes and Gavi got tired. And the first goal, which is a great strike, but I agree with you, I think Ter Stegen could have done better. It's a clearance from Gavi on that cross from the left-hand side, from the Real Madrid left-hand side, right in the centre of the pitch. And Gavi is an amazing player, and I'm sure when he watched the game again, he's going to realize that you just don't clear the ball in that area. You get taught that when you were very young, and that was maybe the beginning of the Gavi kind of like levels dropping in that game because he was also tired. And for me, Oriol Romeu not keeping up with Jude Bellingham on his run on that second goal, even if it's a bit lucky because Modric never misses a first touch, and then he does on that goal. Still, Romeu should have done better. So in the end, I can understand the frustration from a Barcelona point of view that it's a game they control for most of it. And yet somehow they ended up losing it. But they lost the first Clásico last season and they still won the league. So it's not that bad.
All right. For now, they slipped to fourth place in the league. Real Madrid lead on 28 points, level with the aforementioned Girona. And Atletico Madrid have now gone into third place. They're 3 points off the top, but they have a game in hand, Alvaro.
A game in hand against Sevilla. If Sevilla doesn't stop drawing, maybe by the time they play against Atletico, they have no chance of finishing among the top four this season. And that game is going to be played in December. And I think that Atletico, again, show that they've got three or four players who are enjoying the time of their career. Well, Antoine Griezmann has been enjoying it for a long time, but Alvaro Morata is definitely the guy who is who has improved more over the last season's performance. It's incredible. The Alvaro Morata that was rather had a tendency to think too much about the misses he had had in the game is gone. It's like he only looks at the future, like Luis Suarez did in the games. It doesn't matter what happened a second ago. It matters what happens now. We're seeing that Alvaro Morata, he has scored many goals this season. And Atletico won, again, their performances at home have been really good. And maybe soon, Simeone will extend his contract.
Okay.
Yeah, his current contract expires in 2024. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, well, he has had some conversations already to extend his contract. And it looks like that contract extension may be coming soon.
Mm. Wonder if a title race along the way might help in all of that. Mm.
It's going to be there.
Yeah.
I think that it's going to be key for Atletico to recover some injured players. But the 13 or 14 that are performing right now, they are keeping Atletico, you know, at the top of everything. And in the Champions League, even in games that they suffer, they manage to get points. Like, for example, a week ago against Celtic. So it's a good moment for Atletico. And Antoine Griezmann is playing really well. Excellent. I think that he's ranking in the Ballon d'Or standings.
Where did he come?
Yeah, he
27?
Yeah, really? Definitely not in the top 20. Yeah, that doesn't do justice to Antoine Griezmann's last year. Just one more thing on El Clásico, very quickly. I would like to praise Luka Modric because I think that his participation was key for Real Madrid to end up winning the game. Again, there has been a very big heated debate this season about Luka Modric and how veteran he is and how bad that is for Real Madrid. But when he comes onto the pitch, no player has a more panoramic view than him. And I don't think that from the physical side, he is declining so much. I still believe that he's got the legs. So yeah, he was very impressive. And when you compare what Ancelotti brought onto the pitch, Luka Modric, for example, and Camavinga, and Oriol Romeu, well, there is a massive difference in there. Because Oriol Romeu, I have the feeling that, you know, he could be a perfect number seven midfielder for Barcelona. You know, someone has to give some rest to everyone else. But sometimes he has beaten the plan. And to be honest, he's not up to the challenge.
OK. Luka Modric making his 500th appearance there in the Clásico. AF4, Los Blancos. Very good. Rafa, next up, Bundesliga.
Why are so many big stars missing from the Women's Champions League? Do we really need VAR in the women's game? Have Arsenal got too many players? Hello, I'm Sophie Penny, and I'm the host of the all-new Full-Time Europe, The Athletic's women's football podcast. If you're a big women's football fan or a passing purveyor of the game, Full-Time Europe is answering the questions you're asking. From Man United to Lyon, Barcelona to Wolfsburg, we have you covered. That's Full-Time Europe, out every week, available wherever you're listening now.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is The Totally Football Show, part of The Athletic Podcast Network.
The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Schon zu weit draußen und Harry Kane, ja, wie ein Tennisspieler in Wimbledon Center Court.
Is that a tennis player? Oh, tennis player.
Tennis player at Wimbledon.
Okay, because it wasn't quite a tennis score, was it?
No, it's about the
center court.
The lob.
The lob.
Oh, like a lob.
Yeah.
The one on French TV was amazing.
You ever seen tennis,
well.
James?
I've seen tennis, but it's not what came to mind when I was watching that goal. Still.
New balls, please.
I guess they're running out of words to describe what Harry Kane's doing there at Bayern Munich. Why don't you try one or two on this game, which you described as a one in a million match?
Yeah, I mean, the scoreline perhaps doesn't look that impressive. 8-0, Bayern have destroyed teams before. Darmstadt are newly promoted. They were one man down in the most of the second half. But how it happened was quite curious. First of all, Joshua Kimmich gets sent off into the fourth minute of the game. Then Bayern playing 50 minutes with one man down. Darmstadt look quite good. Then Darmstadt have a man sent off, so it's level. Darmstadt are still probably the better team at that point. Bayern really struggling. And then there's a third red card again to Darmstadt just before the break. First time ever in the Bundesliga that there'd be three red cards in the first half. And then in the second half, 9 against 8, as far as outfield players is concerned. And Bayern just used the space really well, and Musiala is having a great game. Sané was outstanding again. Kane scores a hat-trick, including that particular goal, and Bayern destroy Darmstadt.
Tell us about that goal.
Sorry, there's one more thing.
Oh, one more thing.
And it's Manuel Neuer's comeback.
Yes.
After 11 months out.
For a skiing accident. Did
he made one important save.
Did he make a save? Okay.
At 0-0, when Mergen was running at him.
If he'd scored, it would have been Harry and Meghan in this game. Yeah, but he didn't, so... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if his name is Meghan, Marvin Meghan or Meghan Marvin. Yeah, it's Melim.
Oh, Melim. Yeah.
Close enough. Okay. Harry and Melim. Still
mess
works
with
for
my
me.
Melon,
still okay.
Still works for me. Anyway, it was a crazy game, and the fact that Neuer's comeback didn't even sort of make that much of a headline shows you just how weird that game was. And of course, it has big knock-on effects because right. Bayern play Dortmund on Saturday. And
without
who's not?
Joshua Kimmich.
Without Joshua Kimmich.
All right.
So,
but with Kane.
But with
the
Kane.
The hat-trick. Sat, just says Sat as the reader on your piece on this, on The Athletic. His comment was, waiting for the German press to say it's not a real hat-trick because not all the goals were scored in the same half.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
Very, very good one. Took me a minute to understand, but
because he picks it up a couple of metres inside his own half.
And he shoots from the half inside the circle.
Yeah.
And he's still in his own half.
Magnificent goal.
Still not as good as, obviously, Lamine Kamara from Metz 3 weeks ago, who was 58 metres out when Kane was only 54 metres. I'm just saying.
Mm. 12 goals now in his first 9 games.
Do you think it was because he was watching the Beckham documentary?
I think that was the inspiration, yes. Or Klaus Augenthaler from 1989.
Is that a documentary as well? The Augenthalers?
No, but it's a very famous goal in the Bundesliga.
Right.
Uh-huh. And it was voted goal of the decade of the 80s.
Hmm. Yeah.
Great nice decade.
Dortmund coming up on Saturday then with no Kimmich.
No Kimmich.
Remember when Kimmich played in Bayern Dortmund and Pep did that kind of dressing down of him in front of all of the fans?
Was it a Dortmund game? I'm not so sure. He definitely gave him a dressing down on the pitch.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it was against Dortmund though.
But I think it was after like they'd won 5-0.
Yeah, they'd won the game. But Kimmich was playing centre back at the time.
Given Bayern always beat Dortmund 5-0, it makes me think it was
Will
Dortmund.
They this time though? Dortmund this weekend, after their victory away at Newcastle, involved in a pretty exciting clash away at Eintracht Frankfurt. Just the 6 goals in this one, Rafa.
Yeah, and they came back from 2-0 down. And it was the kind of draw, the kind of performance that I think was still seen as a positive, because in previous years, Dortmund would have lost that game. They would have fallen apart, but they came back And they were a little bit unlucky, perhaps, not to win it. But they showed good resilience. And Brandt scored the equaliser late on. He had another really good game. And there are concerns, though, because Gregor Kobel, who is so influential for them, went off. He got an elbow from Schlotterbeck, his own centre-back, into his face and complained of a headache. So hopefully he's not concussed or anything. But without him, I think Dortmund would... their chances would definitely be diminished. But it's not a foregone conclusion. You know, Bayern have dropped points against top teams, certainly against Leverkusen. They were perhaps quite lucky to get a draw. And I think there is a sense that Dortmund can do it.
Dortmund, who are currently fourth after that draw, 2 points behind Bayern, who themselves are 2 points behind leaders Leverkusen, who this weekend beat Freiburg 2-1. That's their eighth victory in a row. Stuttgart, from the leading teams, without the injured Serge Gnabry, suffered their second defeat of the season, 3-2 at home to Hoffenheim, while Mokoruza's RB Leipzig did Köln 6-0. Luis Openda, he's got 8 goals now in 8 games, which in a normal great season would be remarkable, but this year...
I mean, him and Xavi look amazing together.
Ooh, that... pass he made with the outside of his boot.
Incredible.
Pwah.
Just amazing.
He was doing some dancing through the defenders as well.
Yeah, he was wonderful. The two of them have combined so well. Leipzig looked really good.
Dani Olmo,
unfortunately, who's just come back from injury, hurt his shoulder, and I think it's dislocated and he'll be out until the new year, which is really sad because he's got that hat-trick against Bayern in the Super Cup. And looked so good and got injured. Now he's come back and now he's out again.
Mm.
But yeah, Leipzig sort of slightly under the radar because the headlines have been all about obviously Bayern, but also Stuttgart and to an extent Leverkusen, of course. But they look like a team that can be involved in the title race once again.
6-0 this weekend, the 8-0 for Bayern, the 6 goals for Frankfurt and Dortmund. Was it a particularly goaly... weekend.
It was. I made it 42 when I counted. My maths are very rubbish. But yeah, that is the Bundesliga has been incredibly goaly this year. Mm. Last week I checked and it was up to 3.5 goals per game.
Wow. I think over the last 5 years it has been the goaliest.
Yeah. And it's been, I think, over the last 30 years with one exception, I think, when the Premier League was more goal-hungry. A goal hungrier. It hasn't been at this level in more than 40 years.
Wow. 42 goals this weekend. How many from Union Berlin? None.
Sadly,
goals.
None.
Got beaten 2-0 by Werder Bremen. Is that now 9 straight defeats?
10.
10 straight defeats. Remarkably, they're not in the relegation zone yet.
Yet might be the...
Okay, they're 1 point off the playoff spot.
Imperative word.
And 3 off the bottom of the table. But there are 3 worse teams than Union Berlin.
Yes, and they're not a bad team. They played really well against Napoli.
Yeah.
Could have won the game. Played okay at Bremen. A lot of these games, they were equal, if not better, than the opposition, but they just can't get the breaks.
Mm.
They had Rani Kadira sent off. He's a key player for them. He's going to be missing. That's bad news. Mm. I'd like to think that the usual rules don't apply. And Urs Fischer will be safe and they'll say, look, what this guy's done over the last 5-6 years is just incredible. Doesn't matter if we're having a bad season, things will work themselves out and we'll be fine. But the longer this goes on, the harder it's going to be.
Watching them, you don't see any kind of structural problem or the way that he sets the team up or the way that the players are applying. It's just a run
it's
of
nothing,
extraordinary...
It's nothing obvious. His way of working hasn't changed. You can't even say that the team is kind of bored of his method because there's only 3 players who've been there with him. So the team has evolved. It has changed. I mean, I don't know if bringing Leonardo Bonucci was the smartest idea.
Yeah, you keep going on about Bonucci, who it's never plays.
Because,
play.
The truth. But when he plays, they lose. And when he doesn't play, they also lose.
So it's not his fault.
He just shouldn't be there. But, yeah, I think that statistically, the results should swing back. Because they're not being outplayed. They're not being terrible in every single game. But, you know, footballers don't like to hear that.
Mm.
And clubs sometimes feel that we have to just do something because, you know, something has to change. I hope that he he will stay because it'd be quite a travesty for him to lose his job.
Okay. Who have they got next weekend? Union there at home to Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, it's not easy.
All right. Next up, let's hear about France and what Josh Wilson Esbrand got up to.
Yeah.
Hello, listeners. This is Matt Davis Adams, host of Straight Outta Cobham, your dedicated Chelsea podcast from The Athletic. Myself and the motley crew of Liam Toomey, Simon Johnson, Dom Fifield and Luke Bosher are with you twice a week, every week this season, as we bring you all the news and views you could ever possibly want from in and around the club. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts and don't forget to follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
All right, Jules, lots of stories in Ligue 1 as ever. Probably the biggest, though, was the game that didn't take place, Marseille against Lyon, after the attack on the Lyon team bus, and also several supporters' buses on
Sunday. Yeah, six of them, yeah. For the first time in many, many years, the Lyon fans were allowed to travel to Marseille. It's been a long time now in those big games, the PSG Marseille, the Lyon Saint-Etienne, for example, the Lyon Lyon Marseille, even Nice Marseille, that traveling fans are not allowed in because it's too dangerous, it's too risky. And for the first time in many years, this time they were allowed to go. So 600 of them made their way down and they were attacked as well. I mean, then once they were in the stadium, they didn't cover themselves in glory either because they made monkey chants and Nazi salute and all that kind of stuff, which unfortunately we've seen in Lyon before. But obviously the biggest headlines was the Marseille attack, the Marseille fans attack on the bus 2 hours before kickoff. It's a 10-minute journey from the hotel that the Lyon players were staying into the Velodrome. And somehow the police could not secure that 10-minute road in. The Marseille fans knew where the coach would be. And then at that little roundabout where they've attacked buses before there, they just threw stones and pétanque balls. The ball that you play pétanque with.
Jeepers.
To smash the windows. And once the windows were smashed, then they threw cans and bottles, and that's so Fabio Grosso got hit by the shards of the glass exploding, and after that by a can as well. On top of it all, the players were hiding in the
aisle,
in the aisle of the coach, or in the little stairs that you know you have for the back exit, the back door. Really scared and really in shock because they threw flares and fireworks. It could have been far worse than what we saw, and it was already bad on Grosso and Raffaele Longo, his assistant.
Yeah.
But it could have been even worse than that. It was just unreal.
Grosso, who needed 13 stitches, but was, you know, smiling and giving thumbs up afterwards. The game obviously postponed after that. What will happen now? This is not the first story. You mentioned some of the other issues, but even last month we had Marseille's manager leaving because of the intimidation from the fans. What's going to happen?
So because this happened outside of the stadium, this is not technically Marseille as a football club responsibility. So sporting wise, they're not going to face anything. No fine, no points.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Not even the game behind closed doors, because nothing happened. They could say, we don't know who did this. It could have been Lyon fans inflicting that to their own. I mean, they could
PSG
say anything.
Fans, really. False
PSG
flag.
Fans, Saint-Etienne fans coming down, anything. So this is the weirdness about this, is that this is now down to the police to investigate it and maybe find the people. They made nine already. They're looking for more, looking at CCTV cameras and everything. But outside of the police and what they can, the pursuit that they can have, nothing else will happen, which I find really crazy. The league is going to reschedule the game. It might be played on neutral ground or maybe at Velodrome behind closed doors just because it's a high-risk game. But that's it. And I mean, Marseille's struggles to control their own fans is not a new story, unfortunately. It's been going on for many, many years now. I just don't know how you approach this and how you fix it, because we saw 3 weeks ago Montpellier fans throwing a flares at the Clermont goalkeeper. The game was abandoned. It's week after week almost, and it's a real shame for the image of the league, for the league itself. It's a good season, and yet all we talk about mostly is those issues
right
outside of the pitch, in the stands, or outside the grounds now.
And this is a delicate time for French football as well.
Yeah, with the renegotiation or the negotiation over the new TV right deals. If you're TNT Sport, who's supposed to show the game on Sunday right night, if you're Amazon Prime in France, who've paid quite a lot of money to have the rights to show those big games, and then all you can show is Fabio Grosso's face in blood, the coach coming to the Velodrome with no windows left. It's just not good.
Am I right in saying that the league launched the bidding process earlier this month, but so far I've received no offers?
No offer for the amount they wanted.
Okay.
So now they're going directly to each broadcasters to see how much money they can get, who's interested. So in a way, they said they were prepared for it. It's still not a good look when no bids at the value as you wanted have arrived on your desk, basically.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some football then. You mentioned Nice's victory earlier on. They're the new league leaders because Monaco, who were on top, lost at Lille. Paulo Fonseca's Lille.
Yeah, Paulo Fonseca's, who made some big calls. Jonathan David was on the bench, for example. He played a false nine in Yazici. They played well. They were very solid. Adi Hutter, again, had a very attacking team. They created a lot of chances and could not break Lille down, who scored two really good goals to win 2-0. It's a huge win for Lille in their battle to get European places. And for Monaco, it's one of those setbacks. Too many times we've said they've been behind in games, but always managed to come back. They've won 11 points from a losing position. This time, I think it was too difficult for them. It was just a bit of an off day.
Okay. In second place, 1 point behind Nice, Paris Saint-Germain. A 3-2 victory away at Brest. Your friend Warren Zaïre-Emery scoring.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely one too.
It was a great strike from 20 yards out. The big talk was because of Tchouaméni's injury. His metatarsal fracture would keep him out for quite a while. That means probably Zaïre-Emery is going to be called up by Deschamps in the next international break, which again at 17 years old would be pretty remarkable. He kind of flagged a bit towards the end of the game, maybe naturally playing 3 days after Milan. The whole controversy in this game is the Kylian Mbappe goal celebration for the winning goal right at the end, where there was a bit of argy-bargy when the penalty was given. And the crowd have been quite vocal about insulting the PSG players, Achraf Hakimi, especially Kylian himself. So Mbappe scores the penalty on the rebound and then tells the crowd to calm, like Cristiano used to do, and to shush. And he kept going on and on and on about it. So the crowd got even more wound up by it. And then the two managers, Luis Enrique and Eric Roy, saying like, this is not the way he should behave.
Okay, so the crowd were getting at Hakimi because of they were citing the accusation of rape.
Yeah, the investigation.
Which he denies. And, and Mbappe's point was, I think as he put on a post afterwards, what was I supposed to do, sing along with the crowd?
Yes, exactly.
So it doesn't seem, it seems natural on one hand to defend your teammate. Obviously, that's a pretty serious accusation.
Yeah, but so the people from Paris are saying, when Cristiano does the calma, like which is what Kylian did, nobody says anything. When Mbappe does it, it's a controversy. And people outside of Paris saying, like, he should not behave like this. He's the French national team captain as well. He's bigger and better than shushing a crowd at Brest, the way at Brest when PSG are going to win the game 3-2 and he scored two goals.
All right, let's hear about some other leagues. The Eredivisie. Ajax watch. This weekend, they had the big game away at Leaders PSV. Twice, the brave lads from Amsterdam took the lead.
Yeah, even at halftime, they were in the lead.
Mm. How did it finish, Jules?
So they were 2-1 up at halftime. They lost 5-2.
5-2 because of a Chucky Lozano hat-trick. Crikey. Lozano, the first PSV player to score a treble against Ajax since Mark van Bommel in 2005. PSV are now 5 points clear of second place AZ Alkmaar, who Villa dispatched, of course, on Thursday in the Europa Conference League. Ajax slipped to rock bottom of the Eredivisie. They haven't won in 10 games. They lost 5 in a row for the first time in their history. They are 3 points off safety.
They have a new manager, though. John Van Chip, who used to play for them, was very successful.
He's coming.
Then managed Greece. Not that great.
Former Genoa player, of course, wasn't he? Johnny Van Chip.
Van Chip had sailed.
And so replacing Maduro... I was expecting a love group pen from all three of you on Johnny Von Chip.
Let's give him a game or two. Oh dear. We're laughing, but obviously very serious times these for Ajax. In Turkey, meanwhile, who's top of the table? Why? Fenerbahce, who won 10 games out of 10 in the league, Super League, and 19 out of 19 in all competitions this season.
Yeah, I mean, some of their signings in the summer were outrageous, and partly funded by the sale of Arda Güler to Real Madrid. When you can sign Dzeko, who's Champions League finalist, scored in all the big games for Inter last year. Right. Tadic, Ryan Kent from Rangers.
Okay. As you say, outrageous. Dzeko, 10 goals in 10 league games. He got a hat-trick on Sunday in their 5-0 win at Pendikspor. Me neither.
Pendikspor. Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, they are 2 points clear of Galatasaray, who are having themselves a pretty remarkable campaign, only dropped.
You know who are third in the table?
No, I don't, Jules.
Adana Demirspor, where Mario Balotelli plays with Mbanyang. Young. And they had a penalty on Saturday.
Yes.
And both Mario Balotelli and Young wanted to take it. Do you know how they decided?
Rock, paper, scissors.
Exactly. Yeah. Shifumi, Mbanyang Young won. He scored the penalty.
Shifumi.
Yeah.
How do you
I believe that's the real name, no? Because everywhere we say...
Rock, paper, scissors. Yeah.
Well, in Germany we say schnick, schnack, schnuck.
No way. That's not the winner. That is not true. Why? Why schnick, schnack, schnuck?
Couldn't tell you.
It doesn't mean... Schnick doesn't mean anything. Schnack neither. Schnuck.
No? Okay. Jankenpon.
What?
Is that Shifumi?
Is that Japanese?
Japanese.
What does that mean?
No idea.
In Spanish?
Piedra, papel o tijera.
That's quite nice.
Yeah, like in English?
Yeah, like same in French.
All right.
Sorry, so yeah, it was Italian? Cool.
Sassa, carta, forbici.
There you go. That's a bit clumsy, though, isn't it? You can see why it never really took off there. Excellent. Okay, that's Turkey. What's left? Oh, Italy. We'll get on Serie A next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Viola per Makumbu, tutto il Cagliari dentro l'area di rigore. Makumbu dentro l'area, Pavoletti, la palla in rete! Ed è il gol del 4-3! Il gol del 4-3! La rimonta è completata! La rimonta è completata!
Sunday, the greatest ever comeback in the history of Serie A ever. And of course, the miracle man himself, Claudio Ranieri, was involved. The man with the Leicester title, the man with the chocolate biscuits, all that and so much more. Tell us about this incredible game.
Dilly ding,
dilly ding dong.
Well, it looked like it was going to go very badly for him because Cagliari have not won at all this season in Serie A since they were promoted via the playoffs. And they find themselves 2-0 down because, you know, Frosinone, who won the league under Fabio Grosso, the Lyon coach.
Won the second division.
Obviously didn't win Serie A. But Mathias Soulet, who they signed from Juventus, has been one of the outstanding players in the league this year. Scores twice, one with his left, one with his right. He then gives a penalty away. But it looks like everything is going right as rain for Frosinone. And then Cagliari launched his comeback, but they're still 3-2 down, going into stoppage time.
Right.
And Di Francesco at this point is kind of losing his mind because, like, the Frosinone, it's a young team, so they didn't really have experience of managing these kind of situations. And then he throws another curveball by changing system, and they're like, oh God, super confused. And Cagliari make a substitution. They bring on Pavoloso, and he scores twice in stoppage time.
Twice in stoppage time. So they were 3-0 down in the 72nd minute. Mm. And that's, I think, the thing that's never been done before. And no Italian side ever came back from a 3 down of 72 minutes and goes on to win.
Yeah.
And Pavoletti, whose role in that promotion last season, which again was a bit of a miracle from Ranieri that he can file with the others, because they were anything but promotion candidates when he came in.
Yeah, it was another miracle really for him to get them promoted in the first place, because they looked all at sea, and he did not want to go back to the club where he kind of made his name as a manager back in what, the late early 80s early 90s. Yeah.
When Paolo Fonseca and that.
Yes, that Paolo Fonseca, when he got them promoted from the third to the second to the first division. He thought that was as, yeah, he put that on a par with winning the league with Leicester as a miracle. But he goes back, they pull at his heartstrings, and they've looked out of their depth really so far this season. But, you know, maybe this game turns it around. And Pavoletti, Ranieri said, I use him like Juventus used Altafini back in the 70s. There's a super sub, which I think kind of showed his age. I think a lot of the...
Not sure that the reference
does. Specialist like, reference.
But again, right, the okay. lack of experience Frosinone showed. Yeah. Ranieri showed in spades there. Right. And Pavoletti, who I think... maybe made one or two appearances for Italy, was certainly famous for like scoring spectacular headed goals. Mm. Famous also for having a pet pig at one stage, which I think when he was at Livorno he had, and then he moved and he had to basically find a new home for the little pig. No, I think it was one of those, you know, miniature pigs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, just magical, really. You
know? Is this Ranieri's last season?
Surely. No, I don't think
Surely.
It is.
Surely.
I don't think he will ever stop.
Him and Roy Hodgson have to stop at some point and just look after their grandkids.
But Claudio, like, he doesn't, you know, I mean, this is true of a lot of managers who've gone into their 70s. Mm. Yeah, he knows no other game.
Yeah, well.
So
he's finding out, though.
Yeah, but I mean, after promotion.
I know, but. After,
you know, I mean, the promotion itself was just, like, unbelievable considering the state they found themselves
They're
in.
Not bottom of the table now, thanks to that victory. They're in penultimate place, only 1 point off safety. Bottom of the table are Salernitana, who you promised to talk about earlier on.
Well, no, because they played on Friday night, because right. Serie A always puts the big game on a Friday night. Mm-hmm. So it was Genoa against Salernitana.
And almost as big as Bochum against Mainz on
there
Friday
you go.
Night. Yeah.
There you go.
Salernitana now managed by
Super Pippo Inzaghi. Mm. And he was going up against his former Milan teammate, Alberto Gelardino, who is coach of Genoa, who got Genoa promoted last year. Gilla, who's done like far better than anybody expected of him as a coach. And it was a dreadful game, other than the fact that arguably with Sule, the revelation of Serie A this year, Gudmundsson, the Icelandic Dybala, scored another ridiculous goal from outside the box. So, yeah, Super Pippo still looking for his first win after, what, 2 games in charge of Salernitana. But, yeah, wow, we've really shone a light on the bottom of the table
we
in
have.
Serie A.
At the other end, Inter stayed top after a 1-0 win over Roma. A goal from Marcus Thuram.
What a player.
Who scored or assisted 9 in his first 10 matches. A game that was kind of billed as being about a bit of Jose and a lot of Romelu Lukaku. It turned out to be kind of neither.
Yeah, I mean, Jose was at least there. Mm. He was suspended. And he
Lukaku was too, apparently.
Yeah, so Inter's ultras had announced before the international break that they were going to buy 50,000 whistles and distribute them to whistle his every touch. It's something that they did with in 2007 when the original Ronaldo went and joined AC Milan and came up against the team that, you know, loved him. Ronaldo scored at that occasion.
I can't believe they whistled
defeat.
Ronaldo.
I know. But Ronaldo at least scored a great goal. Mm. Whereas Lukaku did nothing. Roma had 2 touches in the opposition penalty area in this game.
That's so bad. I think one is the Cristante header. He almost scored, to be fair, but still.
But I think Lukaku had 18 touches.
Okay. It wasn't really his fault. It was more the way that the team had come to play. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I was quite surprised because you don't really hear top clubs talk like this anymore. But after the game, Roma were very blatant in just saying, we came here to draw this game. I was like, wow, is this like the 1980s? And, you know, even Cristante, who, as Jules mentioned, had Roma's best chance, Jan Sommer making another amazing save, the only save he had to make. He was saying, we don't have any depth. And yeah, on the one hand, they didn't have Paulo Dybala, Chris Smalling, Lorenzo Pellegrini, and Renato Sanchez. So you could say, okay, they were like Spinazzola as well. But at the same time, like, they could bring on Azmoun, they could bring on Belotti, Aouar. So it wasn't like they lacked options. And this is a team that, and a venue where Sassuolo came a few weeks ago and beat Inter. So you can... You might not beat Inter, but you can certainly do better than not have a single shot on target for like an hour and only two, you know, sort of. So.
Champions League favourites for some people.
Well, no, Inter, yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, top of the league. Favourites. Yeah. So,
Juve are in second place after their 1-0 win over Verona. And Milan are third. Milan, who were involved Sunday night in that 2-2 draw away in Naples.
Incredible game.
Yeah, I suppose it was. I mean, it was very entertaining.
It was.
For a neutral. I think if you're a Napoli or a Milan fan, you'd be like, oh my God, this is awful. Like mistakes been made, centre-backs going off injured, sendings off, you know.
Two great, Giroud with the headers to give Milan the two-goal lead. The second, which is brilliantly done. No?
Yeah, just brilliant centre-forward versus centre-back play in that Giroud just holds Rachmani there and then just nods it in. But I thought what was amazing was that, okay, Milan started quite well, then Napoli were on top. Milan didn't do anything for 15 minutes. They have one chance, it forces Giroud, he takes it. And then they, again, didn't have a single shot for 15 minutes. And the one shot they do have, Giroud turns in again. Whenever you watch Milan play Napoli, particularly at the Maradona, you just think it doesn't matter what Napoli do, Milan find a way to beat them. And yet, obviously in the second half, Napoli did come back.
Mm. Right. Well, the first goal, was it the first goal, Politano's?
First goal, Politano. I mean, we mentioned Chucky Lozano's hat-trick for PSV. Politano was the guy competing with Lozano at Napoli last year. They've sort of missed Lozano a little bit, but Politano's there. He's not their top scorer, but in terms of like goal involvements, he's top with Napoli. He's had a really good season.
Was this the goal of the weekend, even with all those other candidates?
Politano's.
Yeah.
Raspadori.
It's a great goal.
Yeah, it's an amazing goal. But Virtus.
Sombrero
better.
And then
I felt really bad for the poor kid who came in because Kalulu, who's standing in for the suspended Malik Chow, gets injured after 16 minutes. And Milan have to throw on Matteo Pellegrino, who's this like 21-year-old Argentine they signed late in the transfer window. His first touch, he gets basically pressed by Politano, loses the ball. And like again on this, he gets sombrero.
He dives in a bit,
And then he gets taken off before the end of the game. Yes. Partly because he was injured as well. But it's a good goal. But Raspadori's free kick is...
That's nice too.
The first direct free kick
of the season.
Of the season.
Yeah, first direct free kick of the season, Serie A.
10 match days.
I know. So
But, you know, equally, Milan could have been 3-0 up at halftime because even though you could say on the balance of play, those two Giroud goals did not reflect the balance of play, they then have that Tijani Reynders chance for 3-0 right at the end of the half. And that would just, I think, killed it. Garcia out.
Well, maybe not. Frosinone probably thought that.
Oh, yeah, sure. And then likewise, Milan still had a couple of chances at 2-2. And then Cavada had the chance to win it right at the end. But it's one of those games where I think both coaches left sort of unsatisfied because, you know, Garcia again has De Laurentiis looming over him. Raf mentioned how well Union Berlin played against Napoli. Napoli scored with their only goal of the game, which happened after an hour. Scored with their own shot at the game after an hour. And again, have to come back from 2-0 down in a game, as they did with Genoa a few weeks ago. So that's not great.
But this is without Victor Osimhen, and it shows that the team still battling.
Still battling, but again, he's criticised for being 2-0 down, his substitutions. For example, we mentioned again, not to go back to Lozano, but if you're going to take Politano, your best player, off, then why are you bringing on Zanoli instead of Lindstrom, who they signed from Frankfurt, who's supposed to be very good? Likewise, for Milan, missed opportunity when you're 2-0 up, could be 3-0 up. You've lost against PSG, you've lost against Juventus. They don't have Victor Osimhen. And then in the final, 15 minutes of the game, you decide to take off Olivier Giroud and Rafa Leao. Giroud kind of kicks off.
Happy, yeah. He never does that.
Yeah, but he kicks off in a way that...
He was really unhappy. He never does that.
Yeah.
And Rafa Leao wasn't happy either. But when was the last time he scored a goal?
He's still like Leao. His body language Leao in Naples.
His body language at time in the game, I thought, was really poor.
It is.
He didn't look interested for a lot of it.
But those are your two match winners. Like, and, you know, Leao, I remember...
Well, this is Giroud's first goal in how long? And Leao equally, that neither of them are scoring at the moment.
Yeah, but Giroud scored.
So it was his first
open play.
Yeah, okay. An open play for a while. But
and he's played in goal.
And he's played in goal.
He's got a clean sheet.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it's one of those things where Garcia and Pioli at the moment... I mean, more Garcia than Pioli, but yeah, that result doesn't help either of them, particularly with Juventus continuing to grind out wins, continuing, you know, even though Pogba's provisionally suspended, Fagioli's out. Yeah, the team has some continuity. You've got, 7 clean sheets, I think, along with Atalanta for the first 10 games. You've got Italians coming up big for them, so like a new core. So the winner was Cambiaso against Verona. Moise Kean had to be taken off because he was so angry at having 2 goals disallowed for really marginal decisions. But Gatti obviously won the derby, Torino. Locatelli won the Milan game. So, you know, things
into
looking
UA
up.
Title race. Yeah. Just on those Milan stats, I just looked on Soccer Base. So Giroud hasn't scored a Serie A goal before this weekend since the 1st of September. And Rafa Leao has gone 9 games without a goal. His last one was on the 23rd of September in a 1-0 over Verona. So, but, real issue for Milan.
It is. I mean, they've got the same attacking stats, I think, as Juventus. And a lot of people dissatisfied with Juventus in terms of, like, they think they should be offering more. Milan create a lot. I mean, they've spread the goals around, I would say. And that's something that they wanted to do. Because I think Leao, Giroud and Pulisic all have 4 goals each. They've got numerous assists between them as well. So it's not too bad. But again, they just don't have the kind of... I think by now, Lautaro on his own has scored as many goals as Giroud, Pulisic and Leao put together.
There you go.
That forward line of Lautaro and Marcus Thuram is just outstandingly good.
Top of the league. Excellent, James. Thank you very much for that. That wraps it up, I think, for today's Totally Football show. Many thanks to you all, to producer Charlie and Rachel in the booth. And you, listener, will return early next week because it's a Champions League week again.
It is.
So we'll get together on Monday?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. And you join us as well, listener. Have a great time in the meanwhile. From all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.